This is The Guardian.
I'm Jane Lee, coming to you from Wurundjeri land, and this is The Full Story. Higher education in Australia is at a crossroads. Uni student enrolments are falling, so are high school retention rates, and government funding for university research has slumped for over a decade to a record low. At the same time, experts are warning that far more Australians will need a degree or TAFE qualification to meet the skills shortages in our economy by 2050. Now, Labor has released a blueprint to try to solve this problem and make higher education more accessible to disadvantaged Australians. So, what's in this plan and how will it work? Today, what will it take to make university more accessible to everyone? It's Tuesday, the 5th of March.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
So, Caitlin, Labor has finally released its long-awaited plan to transform higher education. And I want to get into what is in that plan. But first, in a nutshell, what is wrong with Australian universities right now?
So, Australian universities are under pressure on a lot of fronts right now.
Caitlin Cassidy is the education reporter for Guardian Australia.
They're under-resourced and relying on international students for income. And at the same time, they're struggling to really ramp up enrollment rates amongst student graduates. So, you know, high school retention rates are getting lower, less students are actually graduating high school, and the pipeline to university is getting smaller. There's also growing concern right now about the cost of university, you know, university being something that's kind of reserved for elite Australians that can afford to deal with student loans, with the expenses while you're studying, with costs of rents near universities in urban areas. So this is something that really needs to be addressed to kind of break down those barriers so that university is accessible for everyone, no matter where you come from, no matter where you're living, and no matter your financial circumstances. So they've tried to address this through the Universities Accord, which is, you know, a major report that's been more than a year in the making, hundreds of stakeholders, that's basically tackling that problem of how are we going to account for our future workforce, which will need more people to have qualifications in higher education, and how are we going to increase those attainments, which means actually getting your degrees.
Mm. Well, the experts in this report say that we need at least 80% of the working age population to have finished uni or TAFE by 2050. Now, that's a big leap from where we are now. We're only at 60% at the moment. So why is this needed?
It's needed because it's projected that about 90% of jobs in the future are going to require a degree, so either TAFE or a university degree. That's a really high percentage, and as the report says, we're not there yet. So to get there, we're going to need to more than double the number of Commonwealth-supported students in universities from about 860,000 at the moment to 1.8 million by 2050. To do that, first of all, we're going to have to figure out how we can fit more people in our universities because we haven't actually had a new public university for decades. But we're really going to have to reach underrepresented groups. So I'm talking about, you know, people living in regional and rural areas, people that are first in family maybe to go to the university, low socioeconomic backgrounds, First Nations Australians, students with disabilities that are not at the moment attending university at a level of population parity.
I mean, Australian governments have been trying to boost the number of students from the disadvantaged groups you mentioned into university for decades with you know, Gough Whitlam's free education policy and then HECS, but they're still, as you say, hugely underrepresented. So what is preventing these groups from getting access to higher education at the moment?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of barriers that really are at a structural level and then at a more practical level. So at a structural level, if you're the first in your family to go to university, it might not be something that you're even considering, right? So you need to be encouraging ambition, but also showing people that this is a path that you can take. You know, this is also about reforming our secondary and primary school sector, which is obviously very underfunded for public schools. So there's inequity at kind of every level. And that's why, you know, this reform has really centered itself around equity. And the ambition in that could be the biggest reform that we've actually had in decades. So the expert panel has recommended this needs-based funding model that acknowledges that it's more expensive to provide wraparound supports to people from equity cohorts to ensure they not only get their foot in the door, but they thrive and they attain their degrees. This needs-based funding model would provide a certain incentive for universities, particularly in regional areas, to be enrolling students from disadvantaged cohorts and making sure that they succeed. And it would also be targeted to provide this additional support that's needed. So, you know, things like making sure you're getting tutoring, making sure that you're settled in, making sure that you're part of the community. The chair of the university's Accord panel, Professor Mary O'Kane, has said that this is the key to meeting that target we spoke about of 80% of adults having tertiary qualifications by 2050.
Well, we know another big barrier to higher education is the cost. So is there any advice in the report on how we can make it more affordable?
The report talked about ballooning student debt being a barrier to entry and recommended these kind of quite practical changes to indexation so that repayments were no longer tied to inflation, which basically means that you're not being hit with, you know, a $2,000 increase when indexation occurs. But it also gave feedback on unpaid internships, which are these mandatory placements that students have to complete for a number of degrees, you know, like social work, nursing, teaching, areas that actually do have higher numbers of disadvantaged students and women, especially studying them. So it said that they should be paid either by the Commonwealth or by employers so that you're not in a situation where you're studying, you're completing a placement that might be up to 1,000 hours and you're at the same time trying to juggle, you know, part-time work, the cost of living, affording to stay in your degree, basically.
Well, what did the report recommend by way of targeted support for First Nations students?
First Nations students have been underrepresented for a really long time. So First Nations people comprise 3.7% of the Australian population, but only make up 2.1% of higher education enrolments. That's nowhere near population parity. And the review contends that First Nations people should be at the heart of the tertiary education system, with better systems in place for self-determination. In the interim report, it actually recommended that First Nations Australians in regional areas should be provided Commonwealth-supported placements to study. And that's something the Education Minister, Jason Clare, has already done. So that's happened. And it will be really interesting to see what the effects of that are. But there's a number of other reforms in the final report. One of those is a First Nations Council that would advise ministers on relevant policies and stronger obligations on how universities are actually demonstrating self-determination in their own operations. So, you know, that's things like, do you have First Nations Australians at a managerial level? Do you have First Nations lecturers? Are they in high positions and do they have room to grow? And it also recommends a survey into the prevalence and impact of racism more broadly across tertiary education, which is a historically under-researched area. Another really interesting part of the report is that it acknowledges the benefits of having First Nations knowledge and research in our universities. You know, this is an area that it's recommended is getting more funding, and it's also an area that, you know, could really make Australia stand out, considering we have such historic knowledge, you know, on our doorstep. Why are we not tapping into this more?
Absolutely. So it sounds like it's important not just for First Nations students to get those opportunities of tertiary education, but also to the benefit of universities to get the advantage of First Nations knowledge as well.
Exactly. And there's some really interesting models of that happening overseas. You know, there's actually some universities that are specifically set up for their First Nations population, specifically looking into research in, you know, areas like the environment where First Nations knowledge has been extremely beneficial. So I think that's something that could be really exciting if it is taken up.
Well, what about students in regional areas of Australia who have more limited choices close to home in terms of going to university? What has the report said about that?
Yeah, regional universities are often, you know, the forgotten ones, realistically. But they've been a big focus of the Accord, and I think that's a great thing because we know that regional universities are doing a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to enrolling disadvantaged Australians. Just 15 of Australia's 39 universities have met or exceeded a previous target, which was for 20% of low SES Australians, which means low socioeconomic Australians, attended university. The vast majority are in regional areas. So the report proposed this infrastructure fund, which would be known as the Higher Education Future Fund, which would expand study hubs in regional, rural and remote areas to make higher education more accessible. Basically, it would work with the government funding half of it, about $5 billion, and the other $5 billion to come from universities with untied revenue, so basically the wealthy universities, and additional money that they have.
So how have universities responded to this plan?
So perhaps not unsurprisingly, wealthy universities have really pushed back against it hard. They're calling it a wealth tax. They're saying that it will be taking money away from, you know, philanthropy, money that they receive from international students, money that they work really hard to get. University of Sydney Vice Chancellor Mark Scott called it poor public policy. And on RN last week, he said universities were already addressing these issues and supporting themselves in a chronically underfunded sector.
The government's contribution to research and development in Australia is at the lowest end of the OECD. So that's what universities have been doing with their funding. Universities don't make profits. Universities invest every dollar they make in teaching and learning and research.
Monash University said it a bit clearer, saying, you know, if you need to invest in regional areas or specific areas, then the government should just do it. I think there is some merit to that. The Commonwealth is meant to be a big contributor to public university funding. The difficulty is there's always going to be arguments about where's the money going to come from. But I think what is agreed is this is an area that, you know, infrastructure is historically not been invested in. And we have these massive targets, so we're going to have to find the money from somewhere.
Next, is there enough political will to change higher education?
Disturbing images of young girls have appeared in a small town in Spain. Where have they come from?
Could I just ask for your name?
I'm not keen to share it, really.
Listen to Black Box, a new podcast series from The Guardian. Seven stories about AI and us. Coming soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If this plan goes ahead, then the Commonwealth is also going to have to fork out a lot more money to more than double those Commonwealth-supported placements by 2050, right? So what has the opposition said about that?
The opposition has been a little bit muted so far. They've said they're going to consider the accord, which isn't a flat-out, no, we hate it. Shadow Education Minister Senator Sarah Henderson addressed a Universities Australia conference last week, which I attended, and she said that Labor was, quote, kite-flying its key ideas. So basically just putting them out in the air, seeing where they land in the public, and then kind of biding their time before they make any concrete decisions. But she also pushed back pretty heavily at recommendations for improving equity in the sector.
Pushing vulnerable students with poor grades into a university course risks alienating them from a trade or other more suitable work and putting them on a pathway to failure.
So Senator Henderson argued that providing a bonus to universities to address inequity wouldn't solve the problem because vulnerable students may be placed on a pathway to failure. In short, that they would have better chances of success in a trade or more suitable work. This was backed by research published by ANU professor Andrew Norton in The Australian, who projected that universities would need to enrol students with ATARs as low as 45 to reach enrolment targets, who he reasoned were more likely to drop out and waste taxpayer money. Critics would say, though, that defining a student's future prospects by their ATAR neglects systemic disadvantage. It's no secret that public schools are under-resourced and underfunded, and there's all sorts of reasons why someone's performance in high school may not determine their future success, nor their ambition to enter higher education. I think if we're serious about expanding the demographics that attend higher education institutions, and nobody would seriously argue against disadvantaged Australians having an equal shot at their dreams, then that's when big picture thinking is needed. How can we ensure students are supported throughout their degrees so they can perform to the best of their ability? What systemic issues need to be addressed? And that's a key focus of the accord.
Well, that's the coalition's response. What about the independents? How do they view this report?
When it came to mandatory student placements, the Greens deputy leader and spokesperson for education, Meereen Faruqi, said that paying students must be an immediate priority for Labor, particularly amid a cost of living crisis. And she's been lobbying for this for more than 12 months now. Student groups have been lobbying for this for about 5 years. So I think this is an area that could have immediate relief and could also very, very quickly encourage people that were maybe put off by studying certain courses like nursing or teaching because they weren't being paid for, you know, 6 months unpaid labour to actually go and enrol.
Given how big these problems are, how long does the government estimate it will actually take to do all of this if they were to take up all of these recommendations?
Decades. And when you see targets in a report saying 2050, it's kind of like the red flags going off because that's a really long time. That's 8 election cycles away. You know, props to Jason Clare, but I don't think he's going to be in 2050 still the education minister under the Albanese government. And when he announced the release of the report, he did say that it would take months to actually consider the cost of the recommendations. There's no costing in the report, so we don't really know the fine details. And, you know, that he's going to wait and consider until he makes any announcements.
What I've said is that we'll respond in the next couple of months. It's a big report, right? It's telling us what we need to do, not tomorrow, but what we need to do over the next two decades. Responding to it's bigger than one budget. It's a long-term plan, but we need to start now. And so what I'm doing right now with my colleagues and working with universities and talking to students is work out what are the things that we need to do first.
Well, so do you think then that the Shadow Education Minister, Senator Henderson, has somewhat of a point then in suggesting that Labor is flying a kite? I mean, how are we to know if successive governments over eight election cycles are going to commit to putting all of these recommendations into action?
I think there was some merit in what she was saying, particularly because the federal government actually received the report in December. So they've already had a few months to kind of sit back and ponder. But at the end of the day, there becomes a point where you need to start making some serious decisions. And he said, you know, he wants to stage the recommendations, but clock's ticking. Like, we've got to start actually making some announcements. And I think there's a lot of hope that the May budget will have some money in it, some recommendations in it that will be concrete. But as you said, it's a long time from now. I think the benefit of having, you know, a 400 and something page report is that this is historic, and now successive governments have this kind of hanging over their heads. They've got the recommendations there. They've got a plan on how to get there. And we will be asking questions about why action hasn't been taken.
So out of the Accord's 47 recommendations, what has the government so far committed to adopting?
Yeah, so I mentioned the interim report earlier. The interim report, as well as recommending those Commonwealth-supported placements for First Nations students, which the government has done, it backed an independent student ombudsman, which would be tasked with overseeing student safety and sexual assault complaints at university. The last survey they had into student safety was in 2021, so this is another thing that's been a long time coming. Jason Clare has said that this will start early next year after he's introduced legislation to set up the Ombudsman. And at the Universities Australia conference last week, he also reiterated the government's commitment to set up another 34 university hubs in the regions and suburbs over the next 12 to 18 months. One of those study hubs he attended when he launched the University's Accord report, and that was in Western Sydney, a site that meant a lot for him because he used to push trolleys around there for work. So going from this site of him working for Woolies to become this study hub for Western Sydney University, it was quite poignant. And as he said in a speech on Monday, you know, that's what the Accord is about. It's about equity. And it's about making sure everyone gets a shot. So that was very nice, I thought.
So what happens if the government doesn't act on this report now?
The last time we had a review into the sector was the Bradley Review in 2008. I'm not good at maths, but that's a long time ago. So this is a really, really huge moment for higher education. And it's really going to define the future of a sector which is hugely significant to the Australian, not only the Australian economy, but to this idea of ambition, of equity, of, you know, everyone having a chance to follow their dreams in a cringy way. I think if we don't do it, we're going to be lagging behind the rest of the world. You know, if you look at where the future is heading, it's not in mining jobs. You know, the future is in innovation. It's in investing in tech. It's in jobs that we don't even know exist yet. So if we're not seriously committing to investing in higher education, we're going to be left behind. So this is pivotal. You know, we're at a turning point right now, and we can go one direction or we can go another direction. But it's hard to hold the government to account when there's no timeline for changes to start being implemented. So I think the higher education sector is waiting with bated breath. And it's going to be pushing the government to enact reform, not just in this budget, but in future budgets, because as the report outlines, this is about the next three decades and beyond.
That was Caitlin Cassidy, education reporter for Guardian Australia. You can find more of Caitlin's coverage of the university's Accord at theguardian.com, including a really helpful explainer of the key recommendations from the Accord. We'll link to that on the full story page.
That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alison Chan and Daniel Simo, who also did the sound design and mixing. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave us a review. I'm Jane Lee. Catch you next time.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.